The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So to continue this conversation, exploration on the topic of not self, a simple way to think about what not self is that what we think of as self is not self, is not what it seems to be. In the daily life retreat that I'm teaching, there was a question that came up, something like, how can I cultivate this not self? And that's not exactly what we do with this practice. It's not exactly that we're trying to cultivate a not self. It's more that we're trying to understand that what we think of as self is not what we think of it as. You know, our senses are the way we take in the world. You know, it's not, it makes mistakes, let's say. It makes mistakes. And this kind of attributing a sense of self to our experience. And it just seems so obvious, right? I mean, it sure feels like I'm a me. I mean, I'm thinking these thoughts. You're not thinking these thoughts. It feels like I'm a me. But if we, think about other ways that our mind mistakes things, like every day we can watch the sun move across the sky, only we know that the sun is appearing to move across the sky as a result of the earth spinning on its axis. But it doesn't feel like the earth is spinning on its axis. It feels like the sun is moving across the sky. So it's kind of this kind of misattribution in a way. That it seems so obvious. But when we actually start to look at what we think of as self, it starts to fall apart. The belief or the sense of it being a thing, it being something that's here, that's stable, that's kind of traveling through time with us, that's kind of what we think of in a way. It's like, I was born a me, I was born an I am, and that I am has kind of been the same. Maybe it's kind of grown a little bit or learned some things, but it's basically the same thing that has traveled through time and accreted things and gotten things and maybe gotten rid of a few things, but it's basically this thing that's traveled through time. But if you start to look at what is it that feels like me, it starts to fall apart. It's kind of hard to actually find what feels like me when we start to use our mindfulness, the tool of mindfulness, to look at it. And so the question today of how do we cultivate this not self? It's, we're not trying to cultivate some experience of not self or some finding of not self. What we are exploring is understanding that what we think of as self is not what it seems to be. And so the way to explore this, the way to begin to understand this teaching, is to get to know very thoroughly what we think of as self. And so curiosity about that, studying selfing, studying what feels like I or me or mine. And a lot of us have a way that we think about it as various identities, perhaps. We may have certain ways that the self feels like it's experienced. And sometimes that comes, and we talked about this earlier in the series, different roles, for instance, that we have. Maybe I have a sense of myself as a sibling in relationship to my brother, or I have a role in relationship to my parents as a child. You know, so there are these roles that we have. I have the role of a teacher. I have roles of friends, and so there's certain kind of different things I pick up in each of those roles, in each of those experiences. And the experience of being the teacher is very different than the experience of being the child when I look at it. So we can start to look at the places or the ways it feels like we are identifying. And sometimes it feels like the sense of self is really strong. And it does occasionally, certain things like just come up and it's like, yep, that's me. A sense of self-righteousness is a place often where we really have that strong sense. I'm right. I know what's good. You're wrong. You know, so there's that sense of a real strong sense of kind of congealing. It can kind of just feel like the whole self kind of comes in together or something. Up at Spirit Rock, they have these turkeys. I don't know if you've been up to Spirit Rock ever to see. They have all these wild turkeys on the property. And they multiply and they mate. And in their mating season, you know, when the males come in close to a female, they kind of do this poof, you know, this kind of, they kind of enlarge themselves. Like, that's kind of what the self feels like. It's like, oh yeah, I'm here. That's me. It's got a quality to it. So we recognize it, especially when it feels strong. And so these are the times to really get curious. What is that? What's that experience? We have a lot of different identities. This is another thing that's kind of useful to recognize, actually, that there are times when we have, again, the different roles that I talked about, but also different identities around, perhaps different familiar experiences. So there's like various flavors of perhaps emotional reactivity or certain things that our mind tends to do a lot of. So anger for me was one of those. I really had a strong kind of movement of aversion and would get angry quite easily. I had an identity of being a miserable person, you know, that mostly I was not very happy. And yeah, I mean, miserable was a strong identity. And, you know, even when I wasn't miserable, because it wasn't always there, but this is before I met the practice, you know, I would notice every now and then, probably more often than I remember, that I was actually happy. But my mind would do something like, well, yeah, I'm happy now, but I know that what I really am is miserable. You know, kind of imputing a kind of permanence to the miserableness and having a sense of the impermanence of the happiness. And so, you know, rather than seeing it as both come and go, the mind kind of solidified around one of those identities. And so we all have various flavors of identities that we have practiced a lot of, I guess, let's say. And we can see one thing that is kind of useful to recognize at times is that some of those strategies, you know, not all of them. I mean, you know, my self-hatred strategy, I, you know, I'm not exactly sure why the mind decided to go there. but some of the strategies that we come up with are kind of strategies to navigate our world, our lives. Strategies to navigate what we've met in our lives. And in some ways, as I think back on it, the strategy of self-hatred was somehow trying to get me to be liked or loved by somebody. You know, that if I hated myself, maybe I could become the person that person wanted me to be, or something. I mean, I don't know. It's just so a lot of our senses of self are conditioned. All of our senses of self are conditioned. They come into being as a result of how we've navigated our lives, what has happened to us, our cultures, our conditioning. And so they have come into being with certain conditions. And so we can study them. We can get curious about them. What are they? How do they feel? How often are they there? What is the experience of this sense of self? And so if it feels like a sense of self is really clear, like that self-righteousness, I'm right, that's a good time to be curious about it. I mean, I was exploring today, you know, thinking about talking about this evening. I was taking a walk, and it's kind of like, it wasn't that I was in this completely like not, you know, this completely non-identified place, but it wasn't a very strong identity. There was an ease, there was an okayness. I could tell that there wasn't a complete like letting go of identity, but it wasn't very strong. You know, that may not be the time to try to understand it or observe it. There may be other things that are useful to observe at that time, such as the okayness. That this there's a feeling of being okay, or maybe I had a little bit of an ache in my back. There was a little bit of resistance to that. So there's a little bit of suffering there. Sometimes, and so this is an important kind of recognition, that the sense of self is a constructed thing. It's conditioned and constructed. And the process by which the sense of self is constructed is described in the Buddhist teaching of dependent origination, which I'll go into in another week, a little bit more in more depth. But it basically describes one way to look at that chain of dependent origination, it describes a set of processes by which a sense of self comes into being. That same chain of steps describes the process by which suffering comes into being. And so sometimes, and it's the exact same process, but sometimes what's more obvious is suffering. And like for this afternoon, it was obvious that the pain in my back and the resistance to that was more obvious than, okay, what's the sense of self that is being created that is resisting this? Just the resistance was more obvious. And so that's where there's traction for the practice. You're studying the same pattern, the same cycle, the same conditioning, the same set of conditions, whether you're looking at suffering or whether you're looking at identity or sense of self. And so whatever's kind of most clear. So if suffering is clear, you can look at that, know that. You're studying the same process. But sometimes the sense of self is really clear. When I was experiencing self-hatred, that was very clear, an identity. So what is that like? What's going on there? Another identity around depression, you know, that there was a kind of like, I'm this like unworthy kind of person. I can't do anything. It's this feeling of like collapse into a little puddle, you know, this. So there was a kind of an identity around depression. So the mind, when it has a sense of that identity, can start to be curious about, well, what is this sense of identity? And to be curious about how long it's here. Is it always here? Does it come and go? And that's actually a piece of this exploration, that when we start to look at our identities, And maybe this is just for you know, you may not be able to track this all the way through an identity, but an identity will come, it'll be around for a little while, and then another identity may replace it. And you may not notice that transition, because it seems to me that we have this way of kind of gluing these identities together and thinking that they're all me. And yet when we start to look at it, we can see that the sense of self or the identity in one moment or in one time, and a little bit later, there's another identity, and these two identities don't actually have that much in common, except for the sense that I remember, you know, except there's this sense of memory that's been pulled through them. And that may be why we have that sense of that's me and that's me. It's all me. It's all the same me. So looking at what we take to be self, kind of being curious about this, what is that experience of this identity? And what is another identity? So I'm going to give a little bit of a story or a description about something I watched in one retreat around this. One identity that I had pretty firmly or strongly, I might have mentioned this a couple weeks ago, I don't remember. One identity I had pretty strongly was an identity of being kind of right. You know, I had a good analytical mind and kind of thought that I knew what should be happening in various situations. And so I had this was going on when I was, you know, it was about 20 years ago. So 45-year-old analytical, right person. This was the identity that was being held onto. And it was painful. It was coming up on retreat when I was listening to people ask questions in the hall. And I was like, well, that's not a good question. They should be asking it this way. And, you know, so just like the analytical Andrea was arising in that. And I was feeling it and kind of feeling the suffering of it, feeling the constriction of it, feeling the tightness of it, all of that, just watching this. There had been an event in the hall that morning, and I was doing the walking meditation following that session where this other person had asked a question. And I was just kind of looped in this. I'm right. I know what's good. You know, so really a strong sense of self looped into and feeling into that. I was doing walking meditation outside in front of IMS, and this big truck drove up. This delivery truck drove up, and it was loud, and the doors banged, and the brakes squealed, and the guy got out and slammed the door. And the mind kind of, it was like a split second turn of the mind. And it was kind of a surprise to me what it turned to. It didn't turn to aversion and this is a loud, noisy thing. It's a retreat center. It actually kind of felt like the mind flipped into being a two-year-old that was just delighted with a truck. That's what the mind said. Wow, it's a truck. Oh my gosh, it's so cool. And it was such a contrast. It's like that analytical 45-year-old person who was so wrapped into that just like vanished. And this other identity of like this delighted little kid arose. And seeing that contrast was a very powerful moment for me. It kind of burst the bubble. I mean, I was like working so hard on that identity. I was trying so hard to be mindful of it, to understand it and get to know it and to feel it. And then suddenly it's like, it's gone. It's just a construction and ready to change on a moment of new conditions arising. It's very powerful to see that. The understanding did not happen in the way I thought it would. I mean, there was also, I think, in retrospect, an attachment to being the meditator who would figure out this identity. And yet it was useful because I was really there with the experience and available to see a shift, available to see a new identity arise. These two identities had nothing to do with each other. It was very clear that they were just completely separate, separate unfoldings. Let's see, I'll say a couple other pieces. We can have, and I think I'll go into this a little bit more maybe next time. Another kind of identity that we can be based on, and the identities I've talked about so far have been more, you know, identities and roles, identities in terms of emotions, but we can also have identities in terms of groups. You know, we kind of have identities in terms of people that we grew up with. We could call them in one book that I've read about these kinds of identities, they call them tribal identities. It's like, who do you grow up with? Who's your tribe? You know? So for me, I grew up primarily with white middle-class people. I went to a very white school. I did not have a lot of exposure to people of color. And so a lot of identities, a lot of ideas around self connected to that identity and other. The other piece of that is when I saw somebody of a different race or a different, looked different, you know, somebody who looked really poor or looked really rich, there was a sense of self and other. That there's like, that person is different. That's not us, the us and them kind of thing that happens. And so this is another way that identities can happen. We can identify with, gender-based things or race-based things or sexual orientation, for example. And these things aren't necessarily bad or wrong, but they can create divisions between us. And so it's useful to recognize. It's useful to recognize this. One thing that I found out in my exploration around my own identities is that sometimes my own identity shows up when I am othering someone else. It's kind of like the it shows up in the mind, not as I, me, mine, but as they, them. And that's a kind of an indirect pointer to there is a kind of a clinging to a particular identity. So that's another way to explore different identities is when we are othering. And I'll talk a little bit more about that because I think that's worth a kind of a deeper dive. To explore the othering piece. Othering is a form of selfing, in fact. Identities, we talk about identities as ways that we're selfing, and the idea of selfing as being a misunderstanding can create the sense or the idea that selves, having a sense of self is bad, or I shouldn't have a sense of self. But again, that's not so much what the teaching is. The teaching is more that we understand our senses of self as being processes rather than a thing. That they are not an inherent, solid, immutable kind of thing. They are a conditioned changing process that can be understood as that. And in terms of exploring our identities, you know, often when I talk about exploring suffering, I really encourage compassion for ourselves. It's like these suffering conditions came up out of what happened in our lives, you know, came up like my self-hatred. You know, I didn't ask for self-hatred. You know, it happened because of the conditions of my life and the relationships in my life that it was conditioned. And actually seeing that it was conditioned was a huge place where I began to be okay with seeing it, because it was then no longer so much me. It was more like, well, this is just the conditions that came together in this being. And so seeing that it's conditioned, what made it much easier to be curious about it. So I often talk about honoring our suffering through the witnessing of it, to have some compassion about our suffering. And I think the same thing holds for witnessing our senses of self. We're not trying to get rid of our senses of self. We're trying to understand what they are. Understand that they're conditioned, how they came together. Understand when they make us act unskillfully. Understand how they create suffering. The understanding will allow the mind to begin to let go of those parts that engage in suffering, engage in the creation of tension and stress in our system. So there's a way in which I think our identities, and they're human. Of course, we all have identities. Can we respect them, honor them with our curiosity and mindfulness? And that practice of honoring them, the honoring of the self-hatred. I mean, I did not want to look at the self-hatred. I really would have much rather that it just disappeared. But it was through the honoring of it that the mind began to understand something of it. It began to understand the conditions that put it together, and then could begin to understand that it was actually being built in a moment, being constructed in a moment. There was a strong habit around the self-hatred, but this was a long process looking at the self-hatred. I'm kind of collapsing it into a very short story right now, but there was at one point where I really saw the conditioned nature of the self-hatred, how it came out of history. And I think I mentioned last time, you know, came even out of like prior, like generational kind of things. And so I really felt the deep conditioned nature of the self-hatred. It wasn't my fault. It was just conditions unfolding. That understanding that it was conditioned helped the mind to have space around it. It was no longer such a threatening experience. And so when it came up, actually, when I had that understanding about its conditioned, you know, its conditioned nature and how it was just vast rippling back into time, there was so much freedom and so much compassion for myself and the whole like history of how it came to be that I thought I had actually gotten rid of it. But no, actually, it didn't actually change that it kept arising. But it did create the conditions that the mind could meet it without fear anymore, could meet it without owning it, without taking it to be me. So it burst the kind of the identification with the self-hatred, and it just became something that would arise sometimes and pass sometimes. And so I spent a while on that retreat kind of recognizing, oh, it's not here. And oh, here it is. So seeing it arise, seeing it when it's not here, noticing when it's there, noticing when it's not here. That's a powerful exploration around identity. Noticing when it's not there. Notice when it's absent. And then notice when it's present. And then at some point I saw it actually arising. The moment when the mind picked up a belief and created that identity. And that moment, the mind saw, this doesn't have to be this way. This is just being constructed right in this moment. It's not like there's a reservoir of self-hatred down there. It's actually making it up right now in this moment. That was a shock. That was a kind of a really deep understanding of how an identity arises in the moment. And that was very freeing. It didn't actually make it go away forever, but it definitely undermined the belief And so those thoughts can still arise, but there's not a belief in those thoughts. So it's just the thought arising. But I'm careful with those thoughts because I figure they probably can take root again. So, you know, this kind of exploration can be transformative. Really deeply transformative. Those identities that create and cause so much suffering. The curiosity, the willingness to observe them can transform them. And that happened for me with the self-hatred. It happened because I was willing to respect the self-hatred, to be curious about it, to allow the mind to hold it with mindfulness.